We've had an exciting week, a new addition to our home and the mission.
Yep, it's not a baby, it's a puppy.
A puppy that is going to get very, very big.
I should weigh him so I know how much he weighs right now, so we can compare it when he gets bigger.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a Borbal, which most Americans probably haven't heard of, but it's a South African breed.
A South African Mastiff, basically.
Yeah. It's a Mastiff that was bred to protect their farms from lions and other predators.
Yeah. And we needed a new guard dog. And so we did our research and decided this was a good breed to have. And so we got Poe, is his name, and brought him home this week.
Mm-hmm. And yep.
So far, he's not very much of a guard dog because he's just a few weeks old, but eventually.
Yeah, we did a lot of research on Borbals, and they're huge. His dad is about 150 pounds, and they're really scary looking, and they're very protective, but they're also big teddy bears and very family friendly.
Yeah, good with kids and their family, but if somebody who's not part of the family comes up, then they can be aware of that.
Yeah, so we just have to get him familiar with all of our mission family.
Maybe you heard a cat in the background. I don't know if that came through loud and clear, but that's our cat in the office, which I call Coach Cal because he reminds me of a wild cat.
Yeah.
But the rest of the family calls Albus.
Mm-hmm. He likes to hang out up here at the office. I call him the real boss of the school.
Yeah, he probably is.
He keeps an eye on everything.
Yeah. So I've been doing this past month what we call gospel schools, and maybe sometime we'll do a podcast specifically about that. But it's basically where we make sure people from several churches in a district understand the gospel and know how to share the gospel clearly and faithfully with others. And so it's basically training on how to bear witness to Christ. And so we've done a few of those this month. And then now, as we're going into October, the first Monday in October, we're actually getting back to work here at Shepherd's Academy with our students coming and getting started for their first term of the year. So we're praying and hoping that this will actually be a year that is not interrupted by COVID.
Oh, yes, Lord, please.
who knows? Because things just keep going and going and going much more than any of us thought. But we're hopeful, at least, that maybe we can have an uninterrupted school year for a change, Lord willing.
Which, speaking of COVID, I know it's really bad in America right now, but that's not the case here in Malawi.
Yeah, so we have very little right now. Of course, we're going into summer, mm-hmm. hot time, so not the ideal setting, I guess, for viruses to
But
pass
it went
around.
Crazy in America in the summer.
Yeah, because everybody was inside in the air conditioning.
Ah, that's true.
That's not how people live here.
That's true.
But who knows, by the time we get into rainy season, January or February, we could have fourth wave and then fifth wave and then sixth wave and seventh wave.
No, please, no. It seems less about the seasons and more about new strains just taking their time.
But anyways, that's not our expertise.
No, not at all. I just thought that I thought people might like to hear that it's doing well in Malawi. We're having probably less than 20 new cases a day in the whole country.
Yeah. So, and it's open. If you want to go on a vacation, come to Malawi because it's open and there's lots of friends that we've made in the tourism industry that would love to have you in this beautiful country. And we're going into rainy season, which you would sound like a bad time to come to Malawi, but actually is the best time of year to be here because it's beautiful.
It's gorgeous. It's my favorite time of year.
Yeah. So in the tourism industry, they call it green season because that's a little more travel friendly than rainy season. But
yeah, no quarantine, no anything special, no restrictions.
Just test.
Testing. You have to have a test before you come. Yeah.
But anyways, that's our plug for our friends in the tourism industry. Today, we're going to talk about our medical ministry, which is something we haven't talked about on the podcast for a while. And it's great to be able to update everybody and let them know how it works. And then in the second segment, we're going to bring in one of our guests, kind of an intern we have here for the next 3 months. And she just got here, so we're going to get some of her first impressions. Josh.
And I'm Stacey Lee. We're missionaries in Malawi with Gospel Life Global Missions.
And this is the Gospel Life Podcast, where we talk about missions, Malawi, and more. So during the month of July, you and I led the second round of mobile medical clinics for the year. And as we're getting into October, our colleagues Eric and Stephanie Chapman are going to be coming and landing tomorrow, and they'll be leading our third round. We do three rounds a year. We go to 12 villages throughout southern Malawi. And but for those who are just kind of getting familiar with our mobile medical clinics, that's a mouthful sometimes. Also known just as clinics. How would you explain to someone what a day of clinics is like who has never seen anything but like a formal doctor's office where you go in and you sit forever and you wait and then you deal with a grumpy receptionist and then you wait in the room more for the doctor to come and then he spends 2 seconds with you and
Well,
not that we're bitter about American medical care.
No. Well, we partner with the coordinators in different regions to plan strategic villages that don't have access to medical care. And that's where we decide to pop up. And we take a few totes full of medicine. We've hired a couple of Malawian doctors and a couple of Malawian nurses. And so I think they spread the word that we're going to have a clinic before we get there.
Yeah, the churches themselves do all the organization before we get there, and they designate the place. They may build a little shelter to shade the doctors and stuff, and then they spread the word to their communities that they need to be there by, usually, depending on the location, but usually it's like 8 o'clock on the designated day that people have to be there. And sometimes they tell them to be there at 7 because we're coming at 8.
Because this is Malawi.
Yeah.
And they still sometimes don't show up till noon.
Yeah.
But so the people gather and then the gospel is preached while they're waiting. And then after they hear the gospel, they get tickets to see the doctor and they get in line. They see a nurse. She takes their blood pressure and a few vitals. And then they go and they get to sit and see the doctor. We have another nurse who just does like malaria tests and injections and things like that, that the doctors find necessary. It's very efficiently run and sees a lot of people in a short amount of time. Obviously, we can't treat everything that people present with, but I feel like they do a really good job of meeting people's needs.
Yeah, and you know, the doctors here know what to look for in the common things that are in those environments. So,
yeah,
you know, we deal with a lot of STDs.
Malaria,
scabies, which are are they a bug that gets in children's scalps and cause itching and stuff. What else do we see out there? Those are the big three, I think.
Those are the main ones. Yeah. Oh, they see a lot of like heart disease, high blood pressure.
Yeah.
The sugars, as they call it.
Yeah, which is diabetes.
Yeah.
And a lot of people complaining of eye problems, which we can't really do a lot for, but sometimes we give them just drops. Saline drops, to help with. But every now and then there is a real like medical emergency that presents itself. There was a woman this year that was having basically an asthma attack.
Oh, that's right.
And the doctors were able to give her an inhaler that calmed it down enough for her to go seek better medical care at the hospital, which we hope she did. So that's the basics of how it works. And we may treat anywhere from 100 to 300 people within 6 hours or less. And I know that people who are from the medical field in the US, they just can't imagine that.
It's really quick. It's very efficient. The doctors just sit at a table at two ends of a long table, and then we have the medicines in between with Janet dispersing whatever they ask for, and it's really quick and well run.
And like we said, the doctors, they just kind of have a catalog of what are the typical things to treat. So as soon as they kind of list the symptoms, they may do a test or something, and then, you know, they may do some physical examination, but it's fairly, you know, this, it's a lot of the same things that they're treating. So that makes it a little bit easier and quicker on them than, you know, a place like the US where you may see, I don't know, I've never been a medical doctor, but, you know, you may see 100 different things, or you may have somebody with symptoms you can't quite pinpoint. But here it's pretty simple. Like, this person has malaria, you know, give them a blood test to make sure, and then give them the medicine. So that doesn't take long to figure out. You don't have to do in-depth testing. It's just a simple blood test that you get the results in a few minutes. So from this past July, you and I just took turns taking the team out and driving and directing and organizing. And so from this past round, maybe there's a few highlights of things that stick out to you from your time with the clinics.
Yeah, well, I got to do a couple of the locations in the Lower Shiri. Did Sanji, Bangula, and Chedidi. And I was so excited. I've heard so much about how beautiful Chedidi is. I think everybody's been there but me. And I was so excited to go, and it did not disappoint.
It's a mountainous area on the border beside the town of Sanjay. And it just, kind of creates its own weather up there.
They get a lot of mist and fog.
And
I could see the Mozambique border from where our clinic was. Like, I could have walked there if I wanted to.
Yeah.
That's how close it is. So I really enjoyed that. I just, of course, I take pictures. And so I did a lot of that and had a good time. And then in Bangula, we went to a village called Million, which I would be really interested to know how they got that name.
Yeah.
But in Million, there were so many people with malaria. The doctors, they ended up running out of tests and just having to diagnose and give medicine based on symptoms. And I really feel like we really saved a lot of lives in Million that day.
And the next week, I went to two other locations in the Lower Shiri, and we saw the exact same thing. We saw tons of people testing positive for malaria. And so we were giving out medication for malaria left and right. And what the people started telling us, now, I don't know if this is true or not, but this was the story that was on the ground, was that all the government clinics in the Lower Shiri had run completely out of malaria medication.
Yeah.
And that they were not buying more until the new budget went through Parliament. And so people were going to the clinic, testing positive, but not having anything to treat it with, which is very, very serious.
It is. Malaria, I mean, it's fatal if untreated, but also really easy to treat.
Yeah.
So if you are able to get the medicine, you're good. And I think that's the big one that I always feel like these clinics are really saving lives with our malaria treatment. You was a tiny baby in Million that they treated and she was super sick.
Yeah. That's what I was starting to say is you have these populations that are more at higher risk levels when they get malaria to get sick quickly, to die quickly. Small children, pregnant women, the elderly. And so that's what's really important for us coming from the U.S. You hear about malaria in kind of history books and missionary biographies.
Yeah.
And even here in Malawi, we can go to Cape Maclear on Lake Malawi, which was the first mission station established by David Livingstone and those who came after him. And there's one of the tourist sites is the missionary graveyard.
Yep.
Where these people went there and they got malaria and they died because there was no cure for it at the time. And so it was a very deadly disease, and it sounds very scary to us because we don't have malaria in the U.S. anymore. It used to be but we don't have it there anymore. And so it seems very scary, but at the same time, it typically can be treated very simply and easily if you catch it early enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, for us, we're not medical people. I think in another life, maybe you could have been a doctor or a nurse or something.
I would have really enjoyed it. Yeah.
But me, not so much. I remember watching ER as a child and just getting squeamish every time there was blood or...
I mean, I say that I would have really enjoyed it, but also if our kids vomit, you're the one who has to clean it up because I can't handle that.
But that's the vomit thing. I feel like you deal more with the blood. I deal with the vomit.
That's true.
Division of duties as parents. Not that I enjoy the vomit at all, but... You just can't handle it. So
I can't.
By default, I have to handle it. But my point being, before we got off on that, is that we're not medical people, which is why we hire medical people to participate in this ministry. And yet we see it, and our predecessors who started this see it as an essential part of what we do here. And so that just kind of... You know, that leads us kind of to the big question of why? Why do medical ministry? And, you know, as the president of the mission, I've kind of thought a lot about this, but I am interested to hear your opinion about why you think it's important.
Mine?
Yes.
Well, you know, I just feel like it's hard for people to receive the gospel and to understand their spiritual needs when they're so consumed with worrying about their physical needs. And so that's what a lot of compassion ministry boils down to, is getting people where they're more able to hear the gospel and attend to their spiritual needs by having their physical needs met as well.
Yeah. And I think too, there are worldview issues at stake. So take, for example, how if someone is sick and they're not getting better in a Malawian village, where are they going to go?
The witch doctor.
Yeah. They may go to a clinic or something and give it a try, but if it doesn't, you know, give them a quick solution, then they're going to go to magic because...
Maybe somebody has cursed them.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a charm that will help.
the, you know, it's cause and effect. So in our minds, it's a virus or a parasite or something like that. But so you need to address it in that way through medicine. In their minds, it could be that, but it could be even more likely a spiritual cause of some sort. So to solve the spiritual problem, you have to have a spiritual solution, and therefore you're going either, in some cases, to prosperity charismatic churches that promise healing and those types of things, or you go to the witch doctor and get some sort of charm or treatment through the witch doctor. And so that just kind of puts it in a different perspective. Like, it's not just here are poor people who don't have access to medical care. It's here are people who are fallen, who are sinful, who are idolatrous, and they are looking for their solutions in a place that's not ultimately going to give them the full solution. And honestly, I think there's a reason they go to the witch doctor. It's because sometimes it works.
Yeah.
And maybe that's by accident, or maybe that's demonic. We don't know all that's going on in the spiritual realm, but people wouldn't keep going back to these things if they were completely ineffective. And that's one thing that as Americans, we have to think about, because we kind of just assume, oh, it's all, you know, pretend, hocus pocus, you know, and it's not. There's actual spiritual power, demonic power involved in these things. So that's what binds people in slavery to them. And so medical missions is a worldview issue. It's about changing the way people think about the world and building a biblical worldview. And I didn't come to this on my own, but one thing that helped me was this old book that Matt Pierce, if you're listening to this, you gave me this book before we moved to Moldova. It's called An Introduction to the Science of Missions by a Dutch man, J.H. Bavinck. And he wrote it in 1954, and there's a translation out there into English from Dutch. And one of the things that he says in here, he addresses medical ministry a lot, which I think is very helpful, because a lot of modern missions texts don't talk about it directly. And this is what he says about medical, one of the things he says that I found so helpful. Under the influence of our secular culture, the practice of medicine is ever in danger of regarding sickness and health independently of God. God's not being recognized in the administration of medicine can sometimes be the reason why people do not gradually see the Father who is in heaven, but are rather pushed into an empty materialism where there is only room for an external means and where all prayer dies out. The danger can be avoided only if medical aid is integrated within the framework of preaching to a much greater degree than usually occurs. So I think what he's saying is that from our side of things, because we believe in medicine, we can go the opposite direction and just completely rely on medicine and forget about God.
Yeah.
So that's our danger. And we see this, right, in the U.S. You go to the hospital, what kind of name is going to be on the hospital?
Saint something.
Or Western Baptist or Baptist East or, Saint whatever hospital or Presbyterian hospital. You know, the hospitals in the U.S. were started by churches, and yet now they are completely divorced from any type of Christian influence. I think the exception largely would be Catholic hospitals.
Yeah.
Which have maintained a closer relationship and often get in trouble because the government mandates that they do things like abortion and they refuse because it goes against their faith. But the point being, we can divorce God from medicine so that we just put our faith in medicine and we forget about God. And I think we could take some applications from that in the current pandemic that, you know, we keep looking for this medical answer. And whatever your view is about the vaccine, and this is not going to be a political show, but it's obvious that it's not as effective as people were expecting it to be. Let's just leave it at that. It's not as effective as people wanted it to be. And so they put all their faith in this thing that people were going to create to stop this tidal wave, and it's still going. And it just is a reminder that we are limited. Mm-hmm. We're human.
Yeah.
But the point being that if you go back to the foundation of Western medicine, there's a reason it came out of Christianity, out of Christian cultures.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason that modern medicine didn't come out of India, or modern medicine didn't come out of Africa pre-Christian. Because when you live in a world where there are many spirits and many gods all kind of competing with one another, all having their own agenda, the world is chaos. It's unpredictable. You can't know for sure whether it's this reason or that reason that something's happening. But if the world is created by one God, then it's ordered. Then there's laws to the universe. There's cause and effect in the universe that can be studied, and we can think God's thoughts after him, know the things that he already knows by studying the world, and then apply those things in order to cure diseases and things like that. That comes out of a Christian worldview. And I think part of our role as missionaries is to spread that worldview.
Yeah.
Teach people this is a gift from God, and this is a world that God is in control, and he has given us solutions within the universe to the problems we face, and we're thankful for that. We trust him and his creative order in that, and to put things in perspective, but then also to do that with a humility that unfortunately the medical field kind of has lost, a humility that, yeah, but we also don't have all the answers in medicine.
Yeah.
And so ultimately we go to God, and sometimes that means healing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not the type of people that, you know, we would be labeled cessationist theologically, which means we don't speak in tongues in our church. We don't have healing services or that kind of thing. But that doesn't mean we don't believe in healing.
That he heals. Of course he does.
And so, you know, that brings us to that limitation of the doctors can do what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. But there's things they can't do. And God can do those things if he wills, if he wants to. And to use medical ministry in a way that, yes, introduces people to the gospel, but shapes their worldview so that their first thought isn't, I need to go to the witch doctor.
Right.
Their first thought is, I need to go to God, and then I need to seek out medical care because God created this world and there are people who study it and try to understand it.
Yeah. That's good. That'll preach.
It's time for a cultural tidbit.
Yep. And this is something that we have read in a couple of books, and a friend just reminded me about the other day, which is that when kids are ready to start school, like what we would call kindergarten, they have to prove that they can put their arm over their head and touch their ear on the other side of their head.
And that's the way to determine that they're big enough to go to school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've talked to a couple of people about whether or not that's really true, because it was a, you know, it was an American friend who told me that, but they said they think it was more common in the past. They had to do it when they started school, but they think it's kind of fading out these days.
Yeah. And so you can see it in The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind movie on Netflix.
Oh yeah, yeah. He has to do it.
He has to do it in that movie, and they kind of joke about it that his father, you know, had to do the same thing when he was young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Grace reminded me that it's also in the Nelson Mandela biography.
Okay. Yeah, his autobiography.
Yeah. Yeah. That he has to do it.
Yeah. So if you have a kindergartner, just check, make sure they can put their hand around their head, over the top.
Yeah.
And touch their ear so that they're big enough to go to school.
And they said it's because some people would lie about their kid's age so that they could start school earlier so they don't have them at home.
Okay. Okay. So that proves it, huh?
Yeah.
We'll have to check with Abraham and see if he can do it, because he's a kindergartner this year.
Yeah. I'm really curious. But he's pretty tall for his age, so I bet he can.
Yeah, probably.
Macy Young here with us for 3 months. We're so excited to have her here.
It's good to be here. I love it here.
She just got here on Saturday, so she's been here for less than a week. I think on a previous podcast, we mentioned that she and another friend, Kristen, were both supposed to come. But Kristen got another job offer that she just couldn't say no to. So we're really happy for that opportunity for her. And we also miss her.
Oh, yes. I miss my little roommate. I am so happy to be here. Before I came, I went through some difficult things, and God was kind of showing me that I needed to wait on Him in His plan for my life instead of just assuming that I'm supposed to do a certain thing and everything planned out perfectly. But God kind of took those things away from me that I had planned out and showed me that to trust on Him, and He will make my path clear as I trust Him.
Well, we certainly know a thing or two about that, don't we?
Yeah. So yeah, it was pretty funny when we were thinking about people who might want to come here. You just kind of came to my mind, and I didn't really know why, but I just sent your mom a message seeing if you might be interested, and here we are.
Yes, and that's kind of crazy, because as soon as my parents told me, that was about the time when God was showing me that I needed to wait on Him. And I was like, okay, God, I'll wait. And then it was like the next couple of days, my parents told me, oh, the Hutchins want to know if you want to come and stay with them for a while. And I was like, okay, God, that was quick. That was quicker than I had imagined that you would show me what I need to do next.
All right. So you're here. You want to give us some of your first impressions of Malawi? What do you think so far?
Sure. When I got here, I thought that they had lost my baggage, because I was applying for my visa and you could see the baggage claim from where I was getting my visa. And I looked and I saw one of my little bags, but none of anyone else's. Like, the Hutchins had brought some things over and I saw none of it. And so finally, when I went over there, it was all there, but I was getting a little anxious that they had lost everything with all the stories people say losing baggage. But I get here, and as soon as I get out to the car to go to the Hutchins house, I get on the wrong side.
Yeah, the wrong side of the vehicle.
Yes, and that was a big change, and I think I've done that almost every time I've gotten in their vehicle, just trying to get used to it, that I'm not the one driving. So.
I took Macy to Blantyre 2 days ago for shopping, and every time we would walk to the car, I'd be like, okay, I just unlocked your car door. You can walk around there.
Yes, it's so different. And another thing is just since they drive on the left side of the road, it just makes me nervous because people walk along the roads all the time and they walk in front of cars. And they don't look both ways like I've always been taught as a child to look both ways before you cross. They just walk. And it just... I'm just always scared that we're going to hit somebody on accident because they don't watch.
And that is pretty scary when you first get here and we were first learning how to drive. It's generally more assumed that cars will yield to pedestrians and bicycles here than it is in the U.S. So as the driver, you're the one who has to be careful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But just little things like that I have noticed. I have never lived on my own before. I've always lived with my parents, and it was very different when I first came and lived in the little house by myself. But I really like it. I really like it. It's perfect little house for me.
Yeah. But you're not completely alone up there in the house. You were telling us that you've got some new friends up there.
I do. They're not welcome friends. They are large spiders that I have come to be very scared of and have had some adventures with here lately, trying to figure out how to kill them without them jumping on me or getting on me.
Just for the listeners' information, they're what we call flatty spiders. They are kind of large, but they're totally flat and they like to hide behind stuff and they're completely harmless. And before we started recording, I was just trying to tell Macy, flatties are friends because they eat other bugs that you don't want to have around. And they don't make webs or anything, so they don't mess up your house and make it look bad. Flatties, I leave them alone and I welcome them to my house.
Well, I have yet to welcome them, so maybe I'll get used to them eventually.
Have you seen any geckos in the house?
I have not. I'm really thankful that I haven't yet either.
Well, they're another helpful resident in your house because they eat other bugs and stuff, and they're just cute little lizardy things that don't bother you at all.
Okay, yeah. That's good to know.
And
good
they to tend know. To get in that house. We don't ever have them in our house because we have so many cats. But up there, I've seen them quite a bit.
Yep.
Gotcha. Well, I have not seen one yet. And I guess I'll know now not to be too scared of them.
So you went to your first church service on Sunday.
I did.
What's your impressions of church in Malawi? Of course, it's just one type of church service and it's in town. So when we go out to the village, you'll get a different experience, but
Definitely different than what I'm used to at Union. I did not understand most of it or what was going on or when I was supposed to pray until everybody bows their head, but I really enjoyed the sermon. It taught about how God is the ultimate high priest and that he sent his son, to die, for our sins. And it was really good from what I could understand of it, even with the translator. I really enjoyed the singing. They sung one English song, which I really enjoyed, but I had recognized the tunes of several of the songs that I could not understand. And the atmosphere was very lively, and that is also more lively than I'm used to at Union. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the spirit of all the people there. And I really liked it. It was definitely different than what I'm used to, but a good different.
Yeah, we've joked that churches in America, when we come visit, are going to have to step up their worship game.
Absolutely, absolutely. And some people dance, some people clap, and that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, Pastor Matt doesn't dance at Union Baptist Church.
No, oh, but man. we need to tell him.
He needs to
step up his game too.
So. Red Bull or something before the service.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. It's very beautiful here. I wake up and I'm still obsessed with the view and watching all the baboons. I thought they were friendly at first because as soon as I saw one, I was like, oh, I've got to get a picture of one. But then when they said they were mean, I was like, okay, maybe not so friendly. But just seeing a baboon walk across the street is so new to me because you don't see those things, of course, other than a zoo at home. So just seeing all the different animals and creatures, it's just so new and different. And I like it. I like it.
We don't have a troop. You call baboons a troop? A troop of baboons?
I guess it's a troop of monkeys.
Yeah, so. And a baboon is a type of monkey.
Yeah, because it has so a tail.
Yeah. So we don't have a troop near our home, but our friends on the other side of town have them, and they just despise them, hate them.
Yeah. You have to be really careful. They come in the windows and can steal your fruit. They steal all the fruit off the trees.
They can kill your dog.
Mm-hmm. And they terrorize dogs just for fun, I think.
Yeah.
So they're kind of a nuisance. And now it's time to talk about what you're reading. What you reading?
So it's my turn to go first. So right now I am deep in Robert Morgan's biography of Daniel Boone, simply titled Boone. And it's really fascinating. I think that it should be required reading for every Kentuckian.
Really?
Just to, you know the details. Because in school in Kentucky, you have state history. You know, I think maybe the fourth grade we had state history unit. And you know that, you know, the settlers came through the Cumberland Gap and there was Boonesboro and there was Harrodsburg. And you get kind of the basic idea that there was this guy named Daniel Boone. He was a man. He was a... How's the Disney song go for the old show? Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
But anyways, you get the basics. But to just hear the details of his life and just kind of fill out his character, he was a very, you know, he's one of those guys that is almost a tall tale.
Yeah.
But he kind of lives up to it in a lot of ways.
Really?
And Morgan just kind of goes through his life and his character, and he... It's fascinating. It's fascinating to think about, you know, the places that you're familiar with, like Lexington, like Louisville, all the places we've lived in central Kentucky that are just play such a big role in those early days in Kentucky. So what are you reading?
Well, first I wanted to give an update. On the last podcast, I said I was listening to Anna Karenina, and it was fantastic. I highly recommend it. I know I was not very far into it last time, and you were like, isn't it mostly about adultery? And I was like, well, yes, but it's not like giving details. And as I got further through into the end of the book, if you haven't read it, yes, it's significantly about adultery, but it's about like the emptiness of that life. And, you know, it's got a lot of religious messages and Christian messages. And I really loved it. I highly recommend it.
Okay. So that's what you was reading.
Right.
But this is entitled What You're Reading.
I know. I just wanted to give that update. Okay. Right now, I'm almost at the end of a book called The Body Keeps the Score by a doctor named Bessel van der Kolk. And if you're familiar with trauma parenting or anything like that, you might be familiar with this book. It's been also phenomenal in obviously a completely different way from a novel, but it's all about trauma and how that affects the mind and the body and different ways to heal from trauma. And it's really interesting. The author, he's got to be pretty old by now because he was involved in psychology from the basically very beginning of it in the US. And he's come through so many different treatment methods and ideas and schools of thought, and really gets into all the things he's tried and the things that didn't work and the things that have helped. And it's really, really fascinating. If you have anyone in your life who's experienced any kind of trauma, childhood trauma, or he works a lot with war veterans, or people who experience trauma as adults. It's been fascinating.
So we have Macy here. I guess we can ask her, what you're reading, Macy?
I am reading A Long Obedience by Eugene H. Peterson, and I have gotten through the first chapter, and it's really good so far, a little introduction to it, and I have started the second chapter because I couldn't wait for our meeting. I had to read a little farther. So
yeah, so that's what we assigned you to read for being here and kind of discussing. And
oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. And I have enjoyed it so far. And maybe once I get through the second chapter, I can give a little synopsis of what I have applied to myself next time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a classic. And I think it's one of those books that a lot of pastors and preachers refer to the title because the title is just such a good capture of the Christian life, a long obedience in the same direction. But I really don't think as many people have read it as have read the title. And it's just really good. And I haven't read it before now, but I'm enjoying it as well.
Yeah, you're reading it with us.
Yeah.
We're all three reading it together and discussing it once a week.
Yeah, and it's about discipleship. It's about the Christian life. And so really, really enjoying it so far. So you're right, Macy. Maybe we'll talk more about it later.
Sure. Sounds good.
Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Gospel Life Go.
God provides for the needs of Gospel Life through your prayers and gifts. To become a prayer or giving partner, go to gospellife.org.
We hope you join us in glorifying God by growing disciples who make disciples. We hope that you live a gospel life.